The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. At that time, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman of that district came and called out, "Have pity on me, son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But Jesus did not say a word in answer to her. Jesus' disciples came and asked him, "Send her away, for she keeps calling out after us." He said in reply, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But the woman came and did Jesus homage, saying, "Lord, help me." He said in reply, "It is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Please, Lord, for even the dogs eat the scraps that fall from the table of their masters." Then Jesus said to her in reply, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And the woman's daughter was healed from that hour. The Gospel of the Lord. As we know, there are a number of miracles and signs and cures that Jesus performs in the Gospels throughout. And in some cases, they might seem to be repeats of the same miracle. The catch of fish at the beginning of Luke's Gospel is virtually the same miracle of Jesus at the end of the Gospel of John. We have also the multiplication of the loaves, a miracle that we hear six times over four Gospels, because two Gospels actually tell that miracle twice. We are familiar with the centurion's son, in which he comes to Jesus and asks that his son, or in one other case, his servant, be cured. It seems eerily similar to the miracle that is told today in the Gospel, in which it's not a centurion, a Roman centurion, a hated Roman centurion, as far as the Jews are concerned, but a hated Canaanite woman who comes and asks for a miracle in absentia. "Come to cure my daughter," and Jesus cures her from a distance because of the woman's faith. So how do we grapple with the similarity of some of these? Because repetitiveness is not necessarily the goal of the scriptures. They have a purpose in telling different stories as they tell them. And what adds flesh to the bone of this particular miracle are the details that are thrown into it. A Canaanite woman. Jesus came to seek out the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And what that does is it calls upon memories of the history of Israel. The history of Israel. It meant something that this was a Canaanite woman. And no doubt Jesus was playing upon the animosities toward the Canaanites when he says it is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs. I mean, this would be otherwise a racist statement that Jesus is saying. And I'll tell you, if you've been watching the news, we're getting a little sick of hearing accusations of racism everywhere. But the fact that this is a Canaanite woman speaks to the history of Israel, because remember, it was the Canaanites from which the promised land had been conquered by God's holy people. After the exodus from Egypt and the 40 years in the desert, the Canaanites possessed the promised land, and under the leadership of Joshua, as we read in the book of Joshua, the Hebrew people conquered it, beginning with the city of Jericho. I hope we're all familiar with that story, when the walls came a-tumbling down. God had commanded that the people be wiped out, that the entire land be conquered, that there be only his people there. However, in Jericho, if we remember the story, there was a woman named Rahab, or Rahab, depending on how you like to pronounce it, who assisted the spies that Joshua had sent to spy out the region and spy out Jericho, get the lay of the land and get the mood of the people that they were about to conquer. But this Canaanite woman was of assistance to these Hebrew spies. And in return, it was actually her condition, but also in return, the spies promised her that if she remained in her house, she and her family, during the conquest of Jericho, they would be spared. So there were survivors to the conquest of Jericho. It was Rahab and her family. She let them out the window that was attached to the wall. She put the scarlet cord in the window as a signal to the Hebrew armies that she was to be spared. And after the walls of Jericho came tumbling down, the city was wiped out with all its population, but Rahab, a Canaanite woman, was spared. Well, today's gospel is taken from the Gospel of Matthew. And if you look at the very beginning of the Gospel of Matthew, it gives the history of Jesus' family. Usually from father to son and father to son, only five women are mentioned in that genealogy. One of them is Rahab, the survivor of the conquest of Jericho, the Canaanite woman who survived that conquest. Rahab was the mother of Boaz, who was the grandfather of David, who we all know is an ancestor of Jesus. A Canaanite woman is in the ancestry of Jesus. Those who knew that would know that this particular miracle speaks not only to the history of Israel, but to the very family history of Jesus himself, who has roots in the Canaanite people. Of course, by the time you get to the multiple generations from Rahab to Jesus, it's a small percentage, but nonetheless, a Canaanite woman, the great-grandmother of King David, is one of the ancestors of Jesus. And it would speak to that history in Israel and give perhaps a reason why Jesus showed compassion, even though she was not outright a Jewish person, a part of Jesus' nation and a part of Jesus' culture. What else does he say in this gospel? He says, I have come only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That too has a very, very loaded meaning to that statement, because again, what do we need to know? We need to know the history of Israel. After the death of King Solomon, who was the son of King David, the kingdom of Israel, which consisted of 12 tribes, we're familiar with the 12 tribes of Israel, 10 of those tribes seceded from Jerusalem, revolted from the family of David that sat on the throne of Jerusalem. They broke away and formed a kingdom to the north, consisting of 10 tribes of Israel, which formed the northern kingdom of Israel. The remaining two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, remained south, remained loyal to Jerusalem, the family of David and the temple, and they formed the southern kingdom of Judah. The inhabitants came to be known as the Jews, or the Jewish people. The northern kingdom was of 10 tribes that rebelled, and they formed the northern kingdom of Israel. And that occurred in 722 BC. Just 200 years later, the northern kingdom was wiped out by the empire of Assyria, completely wiped off the map. The population disappeared into history and became known as the 10 lost tribes of Israel. One of the cliches we hear that come out of the Old Testament, that's the history. And Jesus is saying, I came to seek out the lost sheep of Israel. He who's a Jewish man of the tribe and family of Judah, whose descendancy is in the family of David, is seeking out those lost people of the northern kingdom that had long since been wiped out. This was a promise that the prophets had made. But there's also a catch there, because the prophets eventually come to the realization, speaking in the words of God, how possible is it to find every last person who was lost, every last descendant of every last person who was lost from the northern kingdom? It's virtually impossible. It can't be done. So what's God's solution? I will simply save everyone. And in saving everyone, I will seek out the lost tribes. In other words, how do you manage to find a needle in a haystack? Just load up the entire haystack, and the needle will be in there somewhere. And that's God's ultimate solution, of which Jesus is that fulfillment when he says, go and make disciples of all the nations. Who knows? Maybe some of us have in our ancestry an ancestor from the lost tribe of Israel. But we see in the history of Israel, it brings flesh to the bones of this particular miracle as to the animosity the Jewish people might have to someone who is not Jewish, a Gentile, but also to what drives Jesus to ultimately curing her and showing compassion for a Canaanite woman. We have to have that knowledge of history. It's an important and it's paramount. And believe it or not, the Jewish people were among the earliest ancient cultures to value history. What do most of their celebrations acknowledge? Their history. The Passover, the purification of the temple in Hanukkah, their sojourn in the desert, remembering their history and God's working with them through history, gives them a sense of identity and gives them a sense of purpose, even and especially when they are experiencing such difficult times as the Babylonian exile, and other persecutions such as those we read in the books of Maccabees. We as Christians have that sense of history as well. Over the last couple of weeks, as a nation, we have been seeing an onslaught against our history as a nation. History being very simplified, being very watered down. History being reduced to cliches and animosities and angry mob slogans. Being done by people who are ignorant of history. We see history being downplayed even in our schools. I mean, how many here have children whose favorite subject is history? Whose second favorite subject is history? Whose eighth favorite subject is history? How many here can really say they know the history of this country? Do we know anything about Thomas Jefferson other than he had slaves? Or George Washington? I'm not downplaying that part of our history. Again, no nation is perfect. But what we see is an onslaught against our nation because of an ignorance of history on one side, and the other side unable to defend it because of a lack of knowledge in history. What it manifests itself in these last couple of weeks is the destruction of statues and demonstrations of one side calling the other side names and then going back and forth. We've been seeing that now for the last few months. But unfortunately, we have even seen that overflow to affecting the church. To affecting the church. Some of you may have seen on the news or on social media or have heard at Mission San Fernando just last week, the statue of Junipero Serra, Saint Junipero Serra, who for all we know walked the very land we now worship on in Temple City because he was the father of the California missions. The statue of Junipero Serra at San Fernando Mission was desecrated last week. His hands were painted red, his face was painted red, no doubt signifying blood, and from the top to bottom was the word murder. No doubt done by people who are ignorant of history. But can we give a response to those who make those accusations? A previous assignment of mine was Mission Dolores Basilica in San Francisco. I enjoyed visiting the visitors, visiting with the tourists who would come and visit, but I got a little tired of usually young millennial college students who came to visit the mission wanting only to know one thing: how many Indians were slaughtered? How many Indians did Junipero Serra kill? And he didn't even found that mission. But that comes from an ignorance of history, an ignorance of the fact that slavery was unacceptable in Christian society, starting with the letter of Paul to Philemon, which he's returning Philemon's slave, Onesimus, and he says, "I return your slave, but I ask you to receive him as a brother, because he has now put on Christ." That led to a Christian attitude in Christian Europe that led to the abolition of slavery in Christian Europe because Christians could not enslave other Christians. And when these royalty and nobility were converting to Christianity and their slaves were also Christian, that changed the very culture of Roman society and ultimately European society to the point where King Charlemagne, Charles the Great, was stalwartly against slavery. Junipero Serra knew what was coming for the natives of Alta California, because he saw what the conquistadors and Spanish settlers had done to the tribes in Mexico. He was driven to come and convert the natives in California, perhaps insisting upon it, maybe forcing them, because he knew what was coming for them if they didn't. And Christians could not enslave other Christians, especially Christians coming from Catholic Spain. It was not until Mexico got its independence from Spain and nationalized the missions that we saw some of the atrocities after the Franciscans had been kicked out. But thank God for President Abraham Lincoln and James Polk, who got California, and Abraham Lincoln, who just a few days before he was assassinated, returned the missions, all but two of them, to the care and administration of the Catholic Church, which we continue to see in it today. That's the history behind it. But there's more to Junipero Serra, our saint here from California, than simple cliches and accusations. And we hear others like that. What do they say about our church? All they have to do is say certain words: crusades, inquisition, and I'm not talking a Mel Brooks song, the Inquisition. What do people say about it, and how do we as Catholics respond? What do we know? Do we know our history? We have a miracle, which could be just another miracle in the gospel, but it speaks in its details to the history of Israel and what may have been behind Christ's cure of a Canaanite woman. We too are called to know our history as a nation and as a church. You can tell I love history. I am one of whom history is my favorite subject. I'm a priest, yes, I know. Religion's my second favorite subject. History is my first, and I'm glad it is. I've read some really wonderful books recently, one called His Excellency George Washington, which speaks about the fact that Washington owned slaves. Another called The Art of Power, a biography of Thomas Jefferson, which also spoke to Jefferson owning slaves, but also spoke to how these two Southern slave owners, by the very fact of founding this country, changed them, changed their attitudes with regard to slavery in their later years. You see in their letters on how they began to realize maybe slavery isn't too conducive to a society we just started that's based upon liberty and the equality of everyone. As governor of Virginia, Thomas Jefferson tried to push abolition of slavery through the legislature, which unfortunately did not pass that. But there's more to that history if we simply read the history, we learn the history. As for the history of the Catholic Church, there are great histories that are being published right now that are addressing a lot of what the accusations are made against the history of the Church, Inquisition, Crusades, and so on. Two written by a wonderful author named Rodney Stark. One is called simply, How the West Won. Not How the West Was Won. How the West Won, and how the Catholic Church built Western civilization as we know it. Another by the same author is called God's Battalions, which is about the Crusades, which occurred after 600 years of attacks from the East against Europe before the Europeans decided maybe we need to take the fight to the enemy. And this, by the way, was before the Geneva Conventions and the rules of war. But one thing we learn from just the very history of Israel, the history of our nation, is, and the history of our faith, history is important to know. Without it, this miracle is nothing more than just another miracle of just another cure of another person who had great faith. But knowing the history speaks to what may have moved Jesus to be connected somehow to this woman who was asking for this cure and ultimately curing her daughter. School year is beginning. Our children are returning, your children are returning to school. I don't have any children. Maybe we can make it a resolution for this year, as parents, as parishioners, parents especially to our children, to learn something about the history of our nation or of our church, especially histories that deal with the controversial things that we are facing today as church and as a nation. Let us take up the tradition that were started by the Jews to be aware of one's history, to celebrate one's history, to be firm in who we are as a people because we know our history, even our flawed past. Let's encourage our children to make history maybe not the number one subject that they like, but right up there, because there are heck of a lot of good stories in history. But without knowing our history, we will not know our identity. And without knowing our history, there's no way we can defend our faith. And without knowing our history, there is absolutely no way we can defend our church against the statements and accusations that people who are ignorant of history make against us. As a nation, as a church, and as a people of faith, let us continue to grow in that faith, part and parcel of which is growing in a knowledge of our history.